Anyway, welcome to, I guess it's the ninth week of the program. And it's been kind of organized a little bit thematically, and it seems as though the more formal, well, not entirely, but we just finished kind of favorability, and now we're largely starting with a focus on flux, vacua, and also sort of simultaneously, I guess we have topological field theory, topological string theory kind of penciled in. In 2 weeks we have this week of conference run by Dave Morrison and Edward Frankel. So it's been a great program so far based on, I think, just a sense of a high level of activity. It's not great having talks every single day, but the fact is that the great majority of them are very interesting. I just have learned something from almost every talk, and I hope that even though having talks every day isn't great, I just, hope at least the high level of interest and sense of new ideas continues. There are a lot of new faces here. Actually, maybe get some speed. Seats over here. Anyway, James, are you looking for me to put on the microphone? Is that why you're
saying?
It's just a discussion. It's just an organizational meeting. There's no, okay. So we aren't going to take this. Anyway, we should go around and introduce ourselves because a lot of new faces here. And then Melanie was going to lead the discussion of the physics, what we might want to talk about in the next few weeks. So anyway, I'm Joe Polchinski, and I'm from the KITP.
I'm Melanie Becker from Texas A&M.
Dave Morrison from UCSB.
Veronica Hubeli from Durham.
Aaron Bergman from A&M.
Rosanna Tahola from Rutgers.
Julia Bell from A&M.
Paul Brulard from A&M.
Mukund Nagamani from Durham.
Rob Mann, University of Waterloo.
Daniel Robbins from the University of Texas, Austin. Gavin Wunderkopf
from the KBUA group. Wolfgang Yachirum,
sir. Timo Bayern from Stanford.
Dimitri Sorensen from Padua.
Thomas Kim from what?
Andy Nitzke from Harvard.
Sean Downs from Texas A&M.
Nikolai Bowick, USC.
Brian Gold, Ryan.
Nori Yizuka from here.
Martin Schnabel, Prague.
Ruben Inasian, Paris.
Don't worry, I just thought the other thing I meant to say. We sort of fallen into a pattern of having two kinds of talks, both talks largely on the blackboard, which I think has been very good. It encourages questions, and if you're going to sit through a lot of talks, it's easier, I think, to sit through a lot of blackboard talks than to sit through a lot of PowerPoints. But there seem to be sort of fixed point of 60-minute research talks and 90-minute pedagogical talks with some, and it's pretty clear which category each talk is falling into, but if you're going to be a speaker, we should discuss what would be appropriate. There's other formats. For a while, we were having informal discussions in the morning that would involve only a fraction of the people on more technical subjects. So if you want to give a talk, if you want to hear a talk, if you want to make a small group and schedule something, get a room, there's lots of flexibility in the format. So. I think the idea was we would just go with physics.
So what I've done is I went through our directory list and looked at people that we have right now here. Many experts on many, many topics. So what I have done is a list of topics that I think we can have talks or lectures on that I would like to present to you. And in case that I'm missing something, I would like to make notes for suggestions, the topics we can discuss. So what I've first seen is, so I went through it in alphabetical order. And what I've first seen is a group of people working in grand unified theories, F theories. or the aim to obtain standard mortgage groups in the context of flux compactifications. So and then what we do have is several approaches. First, my favorite approach is periodic fluxes, but I can say a couple of words about. Then I've seen people working in the six prime models, so intersecting different models. Then we have a bunch of people working in type 2B or uniform models and gap groups. And some experts with F3 guts. So that's so far what I've seen, people trying to reproduce either standard model gauge groups or grand unified theories. So and what we would like probably to do is to have talks on all of these different types of topics and to contrast, so what are the advantages of one approach, what are the disadvantages. So I can tell you, and what I would like to do is now is to have each of you, so the experts on each of those fields, say a few words, so where does it stand? What are the difficulties, what are the challenges of particular approaches. So what I can do is I can tell you a few words on periodic fluxes. So let me start maybe. So working with fluxes in the periodic theory has got some advantages and some clear disadvantages. So let me, difficulties. So what we know in the periodic theory, we know that solid quantum advantages. So what we know is in the periodic theory. So one thing that is very simple about the periodic theory is that we do have just one type of flux. So we don't need to deal with many different types of fluxes of two different types, Ramon-Ramon fluxes. So that's one of the advantages, which makes the theory technically easier.
Well, you have gauge and H flux. Which one are you calling the one?
Well, okay, yeah. I was thinking about, Schwarz flux. Okay,
yeah, you're right.
So that's one of the disadvantages.
It's a conservation
That's the trouble. So we do have one type of flux, which is the H flux, which makes our life easier. Number two, the dilaton is not stabilized, so that we can have, so dilaton is not stabilized. So we don't run into the trouble that many type 2 theories have. So in type 2 theories, what we know is many times the dilaton is stabilized at strong couplings, so many of the vacua there are. In the literature, in type 2 theories are strong coupling vacua. So what do you do about this? Either you understand the dual conformal field theory, or you go to the hydraulic theory where you know the dilaton is a free parameter. So that's one of the advantages of working in the hydraulic theory. What else? So in the hydraulic theory, we don't need sources in order to have non-trivial flux compactifications because we do have the hydraulic Bianchi energy, so we don't need sources. Because if we do have the hydraulic Bianchi energy, which is like this, what we know is that when we don't affect the spin connection to the gauge group, what we see is we can get non-trivial fluxes just taking this Bianchi entity into account without even having to take sources, as is the case in most type 2 theories, which is kind of one of the advantages. So disadvantages, or at least what introduces additional complications, is that in the hydraulic theory, once you turn on fluxes, your manifolds are non-Taylor, which means that there is an emission form that is not closed, so manifolds are not tailored. Which doesn't have to be a disadvantage. It's exciting at the same time because the mark of non-Taylor manifolds with torsion hasn't been developed. So many of the things that we know for Cavallari-Yau manifolds has to be revisited in the context of non-Taylor manifolds. So, but some aspects of this nuclear manifolds have been understood. So let me maybe continue writing over here. So some aspects have been understood. Some examples of such manifolds have been constructed. So the most prominent examples are E2/K3 and Orbifold scale. What else do we understand? So some properties of this of these compact equations, very similarly as we know that happens in the context of type 2 theories, we know that in the Hadronic theory there is a superpotential that is generated, which is expressed in terms of the H flux and J, so which is very reminiscent of what we know for the superpotential that we will have in type 2 theories. So what else do we know? So some of the supersymmetric moduli deformations of such manifolds have been understood. So let me take this one. However, one of the great disadvantages, of the Kramer manifolds with torsion is that we know so few examples of them. So it's like in the case of Calabi-Yau manifolds at the beginning, not many Calabi-Yau manifolds were known, but now we know zillions of Calabi-Yau manifolds. So constructing new examples and understanding properties of Calabi-Yau of compactifications, non-Kramer compactifications with torsion is one of the kind of goals for the future. And I guess what I would like to do is to pass the ball to Catherine, who has been recently working on hadronic flux compactifications. So maybe you can just summarize a little bit about new developments in fluxes.
Well, I mean, I can say a few words on maybe. So I've got something like a 1 hour notice for this. So what I can do is simply to say, so this is supposed to be a discussion, right? So then maybe what I can do is to summarize a little bit the things that I'm thinking about before this 1 hour notice. And maybe what I can do is to list, what I do? You would like to get an overview first of all?
Why would you get an overview? A little bit of an overview of any examples.
Well, I mean, then let me simply start with raising a question or maybe a puzzle, or a list of puzzles. Right, and the first question I would like to ask is the landscape, so that's a good topic for discussion, right? So, and there are many discussions at many conferences, but the question I would like to ask is, is there a landscape for compactification of heterotic strings in the presence of flux? Is there a landscape of heterotic string compactifications, let's say four dimensions, in the presence of flux? Eight changes, right? So we are all familiar with many examples in the context of type 2 compactifications, right? We, for example, take type 2, type 2b, or type 2a. We compactify to four dimensions on a torus or on a Calabi-Yau space. We have all possible cycles in the space, so possibly three cycles. And we, to each Calabi-Yau space, there are, for example, zillions of corresponding flux compactifications. So it's not just one additional one, but there are many more. Now, so the question I would like to ask is there also such a big class of examples for compactifications of hadronic strings? I mean, it's natural to expect that. So personally, I think the answer to this is going to be yes, but since, again, this is a discussion, so I would like to ask the audience for any comments.
Do you consider B-field also as a flux?
Yeah, well, I mean, so at this moment, it's really something where H is going to be H, NS is going to be equal to DB, right? But then there's a chance Hammond's part. So that can be gauge and
it can be gauge or it can be gravitational part. So if B field is counted as flux, then the answer is yes.
So do you expect the degeneracy to be as large as, for example, on the type 2 side?
For example, on the asymmetric orbifolds, based on fitness fluxes.
How about Calabi-Yau spaces, for example? So you know you have Calabi-Yau spaces, right? So do you think the numbers are going to be comparable, or are they going to be? What is the generic description of this? So that is something. Okay. So first of all, the first question is how many of these are there, and the second is so what is the phenomenology of these? What is the phenomenology? Of, let me call this generic flux compactification. So, for example, one question I would like to raise, can we, for example, just to be provocative, is it possible to consider generic, which means also H and S, is it possible, for example, to break EA directly down to the standard model without using Wilson lines if we, for example, consider spaces with H and S? Then SU3 times SU2 times U1, right? For example, that's a question I would like to raise. So it is, for example, possible in the case that we consider a background in which we have H and S. Yes? No? Just laughing.
I'm just laughing, I just haven't worked in the hetero exchange about 15 years, so I didn't have to remember
right.
How it works.
So maybe it's time. Okay, maybe
that's
it's time.
Not true. You
okay.
Okay.
Maybe it's time to catch up. So here, for example, a few reasons to try to catch up. So if we, for example, consider flux compactifications of type 2 strings again, so we know the Dilaton is going to be stabilized, right? So if we say GS is, for example, going to be of order 1, so how are we ever going to fulfill quantum corrections to this, right? So we don't have a worksheet description where we say we add, for example, about a genus of some Riemann surface, right? And we do some perturbative expansion. So that's something that is very hard to do on the type 2B side, so if we say the actual Dilaton is stabilized. So can we ever go beyond supergravity plus a few quantum corrections in flux compactifications for type 2 strings? Right, so on the eukaryotic side, the string coupling constant is a free parameter. We can tune it, right? So we can hope to have a perturbative description. Whatever background we find, we get a leading oral solution, and we can hope to be able to find maybe a framework where we can compute quantum corrections. So that is sort of a little bit the strategy of constructing flux compactifications for heterotic strings.
I didn't just tell you, can you kind of try to speak because I do not have many topics, so.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Okay, so let me then go for the next. So what I would like to the next is go through different model building. So I was thinking maybe Gabriele would like to say a little bit about the six brain models, intersected six brain models. So which is another way how in the literature we can construct a model. Let me just start. So for the D6 brain models, the starting point is that you take D6 brains on 3 cycles, and if you want to preserve SUBI, you need to wrap them on so-called special arranging 3 cycles. And that's where the first
obstacle arises, because we know a lot about holomorphicity, but we don't know so much about special Lagrangian three cycles. That's why most of the work has focused on toroidal orbifolds. There has some, last week there was one paper by Iran Palti, is working in Cambridge, where he has started to work out special Lagrangian cycles for Calabi-Yau manifolds, which come from projective spaces. But that's the first attempt, besides from one paper, which is a few years old, with a quintic manifold. And there's still lots of open issues, like in his case, he cannot really fulfill the tadpole cancellation conditions because there are some data missing for it. And there's also no way to compute the non-chiral spectrum. Lots of computational techniques are missing. So I've worked in these toroidal orbifolds mainly. And mainly with Florian Meiner in the recent years. And we have tried to get standard model-like spectra or gut spectra out of it. And the orbifolds are of course very constrained, so we don't get exactly the standard model and nothing else out, but usually we get additional matter. But on the other hand, the orbifolds are the only things where we really can do computations so far.
How many models do you have?
I forgot the number, but in this estimate with Timo Weigand and Dieter Lust also, we had estimated for the Z2 times Z2 that there should be something like 1 billion, but the problem was that the Z2 times Z2 doesn't have a billion models, but it's less. So we made some estimate from demanding SU3 times SU2 times a hypercharge and 3 quark lepton generations. And so we made estimates for each of these things and multiplied them, and it then came out that we have only 10 to the 8 models, so like 1/10 of the models would have standard model-like features. That was for Z2 times Z2. Then with Florian, I have looked at Z6 prime recently, and there are many, many more models, but it looks like many of them have the same features. So it's not clear if they are really totally independent models or if there are some kind of maps between different models. So the configurations, of course, we couldn't compute like 10 to the 23 models. That's what the computer did for us. So we see many common features that there are, if you look at the chiral spectrum, there's only a very limited set of different chiral spectra. But so far we have not computed the full non-chiral spectrum. We know how to do it, but of course the computer time is limited. So for 10 to the 23 models, you cannot go through it. And So the gauge group and the chiral spectrum is always rather easy to compute. On these orbifolds, we also know how to compute the non-chiral spectrum. Then for the gauge couplings, the tree level value is still rather easy to compute because it's related to the length of the three cycle where the brain is wrapped on. But right now we're computing the threshold corrections for our models because these D-brain models have the disadvantage compared to the heterotic models that you do not automatically gauge coupling. You don't get it, gauge coupling unification. So potentially the thresholds could remedy this. We've computed the threshold for a few cases, and we get, like, depending usually on the compactification volume, there can be something like a value of 150 or so for a gauge threshold, so that's not a small value. And it, of course, can go into the wrong direction, so it can mess up the unification completely. But that's something we're still working on. And then also, since this workshop is on flux compactifications, we don't have any closed-string fluxes in these models, because the problem is that once you have closed-string fluxes, you're away from the Calabi-Yau space, and there have been a few simple models where you have, if you start from the torus, you get torsional cycles. So the thing is, you cannot just impose closed string fluxes to freeze moduli, but the whole background geometry changes, and then it's not clear if the spectrum is derived in the same way, so there's not been much work on that. So in all of these cases, there are some moduli are frozen by supersymmetry, for example, but usually the Keller moduli are not fixed at all in these models.
This will have some interesting challenges. Yeah. All right. So unfortunately, we need to go.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe it's really useful if for every of these model building techniques, we could sort of summarize how far have you actually gotten to build a realistic model? What, like, can you, for example, from heterotic get something like a nice theory?
Get what?
A really realistic theory, like a, well, you know, as you buy, I think the pen group has.
Well, yeah, but they, again, well, realistic, I call it very well, so that people in the pen group have Calabi-Yau spaces.
Right?
So in the pen group, they have Calabi-Yau spaces, so, I mean, they don't tell you that they do have this whole bunch of moduli running around. So, and if you, on the other hand, you include torsion on this money force, then you need to rethink how do I do computational, so how do you determine the building of such money force? Because you're no longer embedding spin connection into gauge connection, so that you can say, okay, the number of generations given by geometry. So you need to rethink everything, so how those building constructions work, which is one of the things that was on my list of things to do.
So. Sorry, what is the status of open string moduli and these intersecting brain models? I mean, are these on rigid cycles, or I mean, brains can move?
No, the thing is that the rigid cycles are computationally much more involved. Simply, by hand, it's really, you can't really guess a good model, so you would have to write a computer program. So far, there has been only a systematic search for the Z2 times Z2 case restriction. And in this case, I have not seen any fully globally consistent model which has realistic features, many unknown. There's some kind of locus models which people use as toy models when they do instant hop calculations, but I haven't seen any fully consistent model. So the models I've been looking at with Florian and Minor have fractional cycles, which still have one modulus which is a Wilson line modulus and one which is a displacement. So they are not fully fixed. They are, in general, these models have some adjoint matter, which so far we have not discussed on how to get rid of it, because the problem with all this is that we can make guesses on the field theory based on charges also, but it's not, so far there have been some computations for just the torus on how to really do the cover couplings or so, but for the fractional cases, there's still this input is missing, so we cannot faithfully write down the model or anything.
What is a fractional case?
Sorry?
What is a fractional case?
A fractional brain is I have a torus cycle, but I've also set two fixed points, and the torus cycle goes through the two fixed points, and then I have something like 1/2 times the torus cycle plus 1/2 times exceptional cycles. And since the brain is stuck at the exceptional cycles, some of the Wilson lines are frozen, for example. But not all, that's the point.
Okay, thank you. So, can I ask maybe Thomas or Timo to say a few words on type 2 theories?
So,
I'm not prepared at all, so...
Sorry,
I didn't get too much of notice of this, but... I think what I liked very much is like the idea of stating basically what are the disadvantages and the advantages,
right.
Because this raises the questions, and then I think we will not be able to answer any questions in any detail here anyway, so let me also make this list, and first of all, so we heard that in the heterotic string, the dilaton is not stabilized, and it was apparently an advantage. I would say that one of the advantages of these type 2B models, or let's say type 2 models, is the fact that we actually understand to some extent how moduli stabilization works, including the dimeton.
But then you have the size, right? Then you have the size.
Well, they one has the size, and
then
at least in type 2b and type 2a, you could argue that you have the fluxes distributed in a nicer way, such that you have both both moduli touched by fluxes. This is correct. But if you would go away from the Kanabiao case anyway, like in the heterotic case, you would also induce a superpotential for the size.
Well, that's okay. I mean, it's sort of interchange, right? So while you sit, while on the type 2 side, you have the dilaton, right, that's going to be stabilized, let's say type 2b, and then the size is going to be arbitrary, right? So it's sort of interchange on the heterotic side. So while you need some number privative effects to stabilize the size on the type 2b side, you may need some number privative effects to stabilize the dilaton, right? So the point was mainly that if you have a dilaton that is small, you can sum up a worksheet over the genus, or the, and then you can maybe find a worksheet description. Otherwise, you don't know if this is going to be a quantum theory at all, right?
I mean, this was not meant as a critics against something, but it's. I mean, I think this is one of the advantages, which is also nice to work in these models. I mean the.
But it's sort of, I mean, it's on the theoretic side, it's actually not completely different. So there's a large class of models where you can take type 2b, for example, compactify on some space, kind of the L space, or maybe let's do it just for K3 times T2. You turn on flux and you can stabilize some moduli on the type 2b side. And you can actually understand this in a similar way on the heterotic side. So you call it moduli stabilization on the type 2b side. On the heterotic side, it's more some kind of topology change, but that also makes some of the moduli disappear.
Absolutely. I think the point is, somehow we believe that these theories are dual in a certain sense anyway.
But the
key is that in some description, certain effects might be simpler to understand than in other pictures.
Right, exactly. And I
believe that, for example, that, so to say, Kalabiao compactifications with fluxes, warped Kalabiao compactifications with fluxes are, so to say, best addressed in this type 2 settings, because there it's closest to be like a full solution. Okay, so but let's move on. I mean, that's what I would call an advantage. The disadvantage of the thing is, which I already just mentioned, what I already mentioned is basically the effect of warping. And well, like with many of these things, it's very hard to put them in one of the two sides, because of course the warping has been like the key to understand many important things. But on the other hand, it's very hard to understand effective theories in the presence of warp. Okay. So, but now let's move on towards the model building issues.
Warping may also be the key to find dual gauge theories of flux.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
I mean, if you don't include warping, you might find the dual gauge theory.
Exactly. I mean, so these strongly warped strokes, they are useful. They are very interesting from an ADS-CFT point of view. That's true, but they also pose enormous problems if you want to think about like compactifications, because things drastically change. Notion of light modes change. Notions of like decoupling on four-dimensional internal fields change. Okay, but we wanted to go towards the model building. So in the model building, as I just said, we are very close to the Kalabiao case. So, and there are many Kalabiaos. And so the thing which we looked at recently in a paper with Ralf Blumhagen, with Timo Weigand and Volker Braun is that, well, let's try to make some progress in building models on compact Kalabiao orientifolds, which we constructed using toric geometry, and where the models are basically from intersecting seven branches on the Lepezzo surfaces. Okay, so what we had to understand is how to deal with the Lepezzo surfaces or how to understand these compact geometries using methods known from toroid geometry. And so the advantages I would, one of the advantages I would say is that rich, so this is a rich set of models, which we can compute, and especially because there are so many toric Calabi-Yau's hypersurfaces in toric spaces, and these can be analyzed in great details, and especially since we are going to F theory, especially one has good control on their Petzu surfaces, their geometry, and how they arise in these compact spaces. Okay. And let me mention the last point, which is more formal point, is that there's vast progress in understanding non-perturbative corrections to these scenarios. So there has been a lot of work in understanding what kind of couplings can be generated by instantons under which conditions. And the other thing which I'm working on is basically how to compute superpotential corrections from open strings using like extended sets of Picker-Fuchs equations. So basically, again, this basically comes down to the fact that we have a very clear understanding what are the compact geometries, and we have an understanding of what are the grains in these compact geometries. Okay. So this is an advantage computations of corrections. And disadvantages, of course, in order to prepare for the F theory story is basically that very simple arguments already show that one gets problems in this perturbative approach to type 2 to gut models, so to say, to gauge theories, because certain things you cannot have there simply from geometry. I mean, you know that, for example, you can never have two intersecting orientifold planes, right? So they cannot touch, like 207 planes cannot touch in such a model. And this means that certain couplings will not be generated, right? Or certain representations will not be induced. So exceptional groups, are not present in these examples. So this, you could immediately say, that's an advantage of heterotic model building, right? You start right away with E8, right? And there's not like the surge of intersecting models. And, so exceptional groups are not accessible here, but this is something which works. The reason for this is because we work at recoupling. It doesn't mean they are there in type 2B string theory, but they are not there in this small GS approach. Okay, and no exceptional group, and this means, for example, there are also certain couplings are missing, which we would like to have for gut theory, like this 10 and 5 couplings. So, perturbative couplings of this type are missing, but that doesn't mean that they are not there at all. It just means that we have to think harder to get control of them.
I mean, you can also get exceptional groups from brains wrapping singularities, right? I mean, 2A. I mean, are you counting that as non-perturbative, or just?
Well, this is a non-perturbative thing. I mean, it's like, that's true.
I mean, this has been known since 10 years or whatever, but somehow, more recently, this is, somehow it was put in a way as if to do something new, we get exception to out of events. Type 2 AMK3, for example,
it's clear to have so whenever you have like shrinking cycles and things can enhance, and there are naturally exceptional groups arise, but of course this is one has to put it into this framework which I was using here, and here was saying moduli stabilization is understood, and these kind of things, they are usually understood in certain regimes again, and in these regimes these other things are not necessarily considered yet. Maybe that's the fairest way to say. Okay, so that's basically.
So my next item on the list is F3 guts, and we do have a talk tomorrow, and Sakura is giving a talk on F3 guts, so I wonder whether you'd like to kind of say a couple of words on
that. Well, I think you can basically just switch A and D.
Then combine the two. Okay, so I guess we're going to use the details tomorrow.
I think that's basically all there is to say anymore, I'll say tonight.
Good. All right.
But also the ball thing?
No, I mean apart from the global thing.
Should there be a star with a G2 next to it or no? Should there be a star with G2 next to it on the left or no?
Star with G2?
G2. Yeah. G2 for fact mechanics.
You want to speak about that? I know nothing about them. I'm wondering if it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? So next item on the list, I found deep brain syndrome corrections. So Timo has got a kind of large review, and there was a large conference in Germany in Munich about instanton corrections in the presence of fluxes. What can we do with, so what can we calculate? Multiple instantons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you have got a great review article on this. So I wonder whether you'd like to say a couple of words on this.
Yeah.
So what we can calculate? So what are the charges, et cetera, et cetera.
So deep brain instantons are of course not at all new in string compactifications at all. They have been around also for over 10 years and have been used, for example, extensively of course in the context say of type 2B oriented poles in KDLT like approaches to stabilize the Keller moduli. So In that community, it has always been well appreciated that Euclidean D-brains, which wrap cycles and which are point-like, in four extended dimensions, contribute non-perturbatively to the superpotential. It has also been known since 1995 that such D-brain instantons can basically be the string theoretic description of gauge instantons. So if one has a theory of D-brains and a Euclidean brain wrapping the same internal cycle as the D-brain, then this Euclidean brain is the string theoretic realization of the ADHM construction, for example. This has also been known for a while. But what was appreciated only, say, 3 years ago or so, such instantons can also induce couplings which would be absent perturbatively in type 2. This has to do with what Thomas just said. For example, this 10-10-5 coupling. Basically, in type 2 oriented folds, both in type 2A and in type 2B, but also in F theory, of course, we have certain selection rules, perturbative selection rules, which constrain the perturbative couplings. And these selection rules, basically axonic shift symmetries, can be broken by non-perturbative effects because they only perturbative selection rules. So from the phenomenological point of view, there has been some activity in the past years about exploiting this effect and generating terms which were traditionally considered forbidden in type 2 constructions. One example is the 10-10-5, other examples originally Majorana masses, etc. So this is one application, so to speak, and further development of instanton calculus in the coupling story. Another field of interest, more on the slightly more formal side, was to classify which instantons can contribute to superpotentials, to F terms, to corrections of the gauge kinetic function. This was not so totally clear by then and has been classified more systematically. For example, it was appreciated that in type 2, as opposed to heterotic or amphibic complexifications, it is much more challenging to make an instanton or to find an instanton which can really contribute to superpotential. Generically, BPS instantons will contribute to higher derivative terms, and it is only in the presence of fluxes, so to speak, that these will then be transformed into superpotential. So these were, from my point of view, the two developments, so to speak. On the one hand, again, theological applications of effects that had been overlooked, mm-hmm. and on the other hand, progress, technical progress as to classifying instantons, which are relevant also then in the process of modular stabilization.
So in the question of, I guess we have examples of KQLT where you know the radius is stabilized, but I mean, does this enlarge a class of models in which you can stabilize the Taylor moduli?
If there exists a larger class?
Yeah, they're now known as the larger class because you have now more instantons that give you a super.
I would put it the other way around. The class has shrunk. In particular, one has appreciated that there is generic tension, and this I think is really a big problem in modeling and in KQLT. And there is tension between chirality on dbrains on the one hand side and stabilization of moduli by instantons on the other. Usually it is, or oftentimes in local approaches to model building, it is assumed that you can basically solve these two areas independently. So one half of the string phenologists work on the standard model, the other half works on stabilization of closed strings, and they simply assume that there is some sector somewhere. But at least in KK, so in type 2A this might, no, even though in type 2A this will be a problem too, but definitely in KKLT this does not work. As has become clear now, because whenever an instanton intersects, so to speak, the dbrain sector, it will not contribute to the model. Or in other words, it is at present a big challenge to stabilize those moduli controlling the size of your chiral brains, the brains which have chiral spectrum. This is a problem type 2A, where it will probably be related to Friedwitten anomalies, where if you have to invoke fluxes. And it's a big problem in type 2B, and it's also a problem, of course, then in F theory, or you name it, whatever. So I think this is probably what survives at present as a challenge. On the other hand, relatively little progress has been made in the past 3 years or so on understanding better the back reaction of the fluxes on the instantons. This had been looked at from M theory point of view. Already by 2005, but I think it's fair to say that other than examples where it works, one does not have a clear picture at present. So these would be two interesting challenges to really tackle, maybe from a more systematic point. And they are very super important for phenology, because basically if we found out that chirality and stabilization of moduli are incompatible, this would of course be a total disaster. So we need to find something.
Well, that sounds like we're going to hear some interesting lectures. So next topic I do have on my list is we do have an expert on type 2 and generalized geometries in the context of type 2 theories. Which I guess Ruben is the expert in type 2 modifications. So
yes,
we are going to hear about this.
If
you
want to
say a few words about...
Yeah, well, I'm not prepared at all, so I didn't tell you short warning.
I did that to everybody.
Good. So there is a very simple sort of idea which underlies all this, is everyone knows that it's easier to solve for supersymmetries or supersymmetry conditions than equations of motion. So then the next question is, can we cast them in good variables? So essentially all there is about this generalized geometry is finding good variables in which you can write supersymmetry conservation. And rather than working with spinners, you realize that you can do it in terms of even or odd forms. So once you have done this step, there is an obvious and very sort of startling thing that you notice, is if you are in type 2B, so you have even or odd forms which are made out of Neve-Schwarz fields. And their derivatives will be obviously odd or even forms accordingly. But Ramon Ramon fluxes in given type 2A or type 2B are only odd or only even. Which means if they are going to balance the Schwarz sector, only one of the two variables that you have is going to be correct. And there is an extra, and this would work in any dimension. I mean, once you just manage to do it, it will work from any dimension. There is a magic in about internal dimension 6 is that all there is about supersymmetry gets sort of packed into a pair of differential equations on this series of forms, which are either even or odd. And one of them is exact. I mean, it does not receive any feedback, any correction from Ramon-Ramon sector. So that's the sector which gives the name generalized Calabi-Yau. So the variable in question is called pure spinner, which is not related in any obvious way to the pure spinners that we were sort of talking about last week. But it's still, I mean, these are pure spinners of ODD groups, okay? And one of the pure spinners is always closed, and this is the one which sort of defines your generalized Calabi-Yau manifold. And the other gets corrections, and that's the one which is, in some ways, probably the more interesting one. So all there is about local equations of motion is essentially can be solved pretty systematically. And this way, you can also, in terms of these generalized Calabi-Yau structures, more or less classify all possible string compactifications. So the problem we have right now, it seems like that we have a full classification of nothing. Everything which is possible is classified, but there aren't many examples. There is an obvious example, which is ordinary Calabi-Yau is a generalized Calabi-Yau. So that's an example. And all the fluxes that you turn on are also described nicely. But if you, we also know very well that you need some kind of orientifold sources. So if you try to factor this in, orientifold compatibility of the formalism with orientifolds, essentially just dries out almost anything you could do. There are some examples. I mean, I can talk about examples. And I think the place where we have plenty of examples are the non-compact cases. So there, the formalism has been useful in sort of producing new things. In compact cases, twisted torus. So tomorrow there should be a paper on the net. So we were very proud for 2 years that we... So there is a class of these twisted tori, which are 34 topologically distinct classes of manifolds. All of which admit general, all of which are generalized Calabi-Yaus. So in the beginning, we thought, we will get lots of examples. The net result was that all the examples we got were T-dual to Calabi-Yau with fluxes, to torus with fluxes. And then we got just one single example, which seemed to be more of a nuisance because, you know, why this one? Why is it there? And why does it work? And why isn't it related to any other model by any duality? All the rest are connected by t-dualities. So, as I said, tomorrow there will be a paper where we will argue that we found some kind of new duality which actually relates this model to other twisted tori, right? So there is a continuum. Well, there is a discrete family, so there is a notion of a family, but one needs to be a little more elastic about what one means by t-duality. That's what goes for examples. And another way is we are sort of trying also to accommodate the heterotic models into the formalism. And in some ways, these torsional backgrounds can be related by some duality to K3 times T2, which, again, one needs to sort of go a little further than T-duality.
Questions, or can I go?
This is a little like the G2 story, isn't it, where it's the most general framework but has no example. I guess it's probably not for the same reasons.
Well, G2 again, I mean, some of the type 2 stuff straightforwardly leads to G2. So these are the KK monopole type of things. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then again, you know that G2 with fluxes is possible, but it's hard to come up with non-trivial examples. So the best examples we have are the which go beyond the Calabi-Yau are these so-called balanced metrics, examples of which are either tori or K3 fibered over by a T2. So there is some uniformity in the examples that, that sort of appear. They appear both in O5, D5 kind of models in type 2 theories, and they also appear in heterotic models with T2 fiber in the hyperkähler mix. So that seems like the nicest thing that one can do, which is sort of beyond Calabia.
But Joe, I would argue that for G2, for generalized Calabia, and also for heterotic flux models, we have the same technical problem, which is that we don't have a good construction of metrics. In the traditional Calabi-Yau case, including the heterotic case with no fluxes, we've got Yau's theorem, which tells us there are metrics, and we don't actually have to worry about what the metrics are. We can just do some rather elementary geometry and be guaranteed at the existence of a metric. And in the heterotic case, you also then need Hermitian-Einstein connection on the bundle, but that's also not a problem. There are theorems about that. And we don't have those techniques, so it's hard to get your hands on examples in all three of these directions for generalization.
This is actually, I think it's the same situation like with the special Lagrangian manifold.
Yeah, same too. I should mention that.
Right. So this is this. So I think maybe what mathematicians, I mean, maybe one of the things which one could try to do is like looking at larger spaces and then considering particular trajectories in the spaces which basically flow to this. These special points, and to understand. So that was basically the approach which people tried to do in the special Lagrangian setup. Basically, you enrich the space, and then you try to understand if we can go step by step towards these examples without needing to know all the details about the geometry.
Right.
And I don't know if people did that in the. So this I wanted to ask basically as a question. I don't know if people did that for these generalized.
Not yet. No, it's I think for mathematicians, it's, the situation is almost as bad as for us. They probably would have a little more examples as far as compact geometries go, but then they don't need to worry about orientable projection. So whatever they have, as far as compactness goes, gets killed by orientable. So it's.
So, I mean, one approach which is exactly that kind of step-by-step approach that uses some kind of flow to get to the answer, which is pretty old, is Witten's gauge linear signal model construction. And in these heterotic flux compactifications, there have been models made that don't try to start from the metric, but start from a GLSM-type approach and kind of flow towards that. And I don't... has anybody really done that in a serious way in your case?
Well... No, I mean, all I know is the recent works by Melnikov and mm-hmm. friends. Yeah, mm-hmm. and there is some progress, but yeah, I cannot see.
I thought he's working.
It's true that we don't have for the spaces something
heterotic. There you go.
Right. that we would need something like Yau theorem so that we don't have to look at a metric, right? I mean, that's for some of the torsional spaces. I mean, that I love so much. So we don't have that, but there is still some sense in which we can sometimes talk about a metric and Calabi-Yau, for example, if we talk about a semi-flat approximation. I mean, that's what SYZ, for example, did, and there are some things that we can still do, even if we have to talk about a metric, and we can actually construct a large space of examples using this kind of approach. But it's true, we do not have yet something like Yau theorem that says, well, just C1 is equal to zero, and you don't have to look at a metric.
Aren't you eventually going to need more than just the bare existence statement anyway? I mean, for example,
sure. Yeah.
Would be good.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
all right.
You know what you can.
Yeah. There is one problem which I have with heterotic strings,
yes.
Which I perceive as a challenge rather than a problem. It seems to me increasingly that sort of. If one wants to formalize it a little bit, I mean, there needs to be some kind of new formulation of it. So it's not really, I mean, the techniques of generalized geometry are very hard to apply to heterotic string. The answer is obvious. H is not closed. Simply that. I mean, you can say this statement in as fancy way as you like. It's not a simple gerb, but it's a two gerb or whatever. No, but it it's
you know that.
Yeah. So the idea is that most likely a sort of a new formulation is required where one doesn't have to work for an on an internal space, but on a space of the bundle over the internal space.
Well, maybe yeah, but let's think about it in a simple way. All right. So you have an action, for example. You have just take super gravity, right? And tangentials of federated strings, and you take the first upper prime correction, so we can write under the Young-Hedge entity. You have a definite set of equations you want to solve. You have supersymmetry constraints, Bianchi identity, and equations of motion. So you can ask a very concrete question. So to these equations with the first upper prime correction, can you find a solution or not? Right? And the answer is so there's a large case of
perfectly fine. But if you want if you want a systematic sort of formal progress, I think you need to find a place on which the thing is correctly formulated.
Okay, you can do it.
Not here. But there are also issues of quantization, for example. What is quantized in heterotic backgrounds? I mean, we know something has to be quantized.
Yes.
And it's not clear. You know, you need to define or... As it's written, it's not very satisfactory. I understand it's a nice equation, H equals dd plus alpha prime.
Yeah.
But, okay, you don't really like to work with quantities which are not closed.
Quantization is a problem with everything that's shown up on. I mean, when you turn on H flux, all hell breaks loose when you try to quantize your fluxes. So, I mean, that's not unique to heterotic.
No, not at all. But I mean, okay, doesn't mean you don't want to understand it.
We agree we need a good formulation of this background, something that go beyond saying that we're at anometric. We need something as well as equal to zero and Taylor. I mean, that can we agree. So.
So let me write down the items that I have left on my list so I can get to ask later on for suggestions. I'm sure that I missed topics that we can discuss about fluxes and inflation. So these are the two remaining topics that I found in the context of, oh no, I forgot one. No, so higher order effects of the work factors. So I should have said that. So work factor effects. So what I would like to suggest is so maybe I can get you to say something about work factor effects. You have got a whole bunch of papers dealing with higher effects on the work factor. What are implications if we take a careful make a careful treatment of the work factor?
I didn't prepare much. I think the status is that it's still not understood. Okay, so we know that the work factor arises from back reaction of the fluxes, but we don't know how. I mean, if we only want to describe the like vacua or static solutions, there is formalism for that, like geometries. But once we want to understand what's the dynamics in 4D, how things start moving, things like that, then I think it's a puzzle what's the role of the warp factor. Like, because it's like a six-dimensional object, which in some, so it depends on the moduli that then you are stabilizing, and that has to be kind of put in these, integrals to compute, I don't know, 4D point. It's like a kind of a retrofitted problem. And at least I have to say, I don't understand, what's the meaning of the work factor in four dimensions.
That sounds very specific. What's the meaning of the work factor?
Yeah, I mean, like, what does it do in the four-dimensional dynamics? Like, can we treat it as a 6D object that we are going to insert in our integrals to compute what happens in 4D? But it's not exactly that, because it's like, some hope for this comes again from dual gauge theories, where we understand a bit better that the work factor is related to running on beta functions and things like that. But so I would say, so what we know so far is that we know how to deal with the work factor if we only keep quadratic terms in the function that we know, and we still don't know what's the how the n equal to 1 theory will look like, so we don't know the Hilbert potential, for example, and that's what we are trying to So I would say it's safe. I mean, what we all know, it's safe to ignore it as long as we are working with a small number of places. And if not, it's hard to make, I mean, it's hard to make physical predictions in 4B. Like, you know, like, these things can affect your cover couplings, mm-hmm. they can affect a lot of things. So, mm-hmm. And they sit precisely where this is rich phenomenologically, you know, these large hierarchies. So there, I mean, I think we cannot say how that is going to affect, you know,
That is actually also for if you take M3 in a purple, I mean, you also have a work factor. Right?
Yeah.
So in the three dimensions, would you also expect some kind
yeah.
of the lineage of convection the work factor here?
Yeah.
Okay, so are there any questions, or can I just go for the next points? So the next points are on my list are non-geometric fluxes, so I'm not sure whether somebody would like to talk about, say a few things about non-geometric fluxes. Dan is mine, so.
Well, that's really no warning, but so the biggest problem, well, one of the biggest problems with the field is that it's got a terrible name. Non-geometric fluxes is really a terrible name, so I'm open to suggestions there. But basically, the idea is, well, what I usually have in mind is just cases where you've done some number of T values or something from spaces with H flux rather than S fluxes. So it's easy to sort of construct toy examples where after a couple of T dualities, you've got some fiber and you're patching it together over a base, but you're patching it together non-geometrically in the sense that your transition functions on the base are no longer just diffeomorphisms of the fiber combined maybe with gauge transformations of the B-field, things like this. So if you believe in any solutions with H-flux and you believe in dualities, I think you're sort of forced to confront these spaces, including constructions which aren't actually dual to the ordinary geometric ones, but can't be obtained just from dualities. And I think it would be great to understand how these things fit into the web of all the other things we've discussed so far, like the generalized Clavier constructions.
Do these have linear state model constructions? And are most linear state models geometric or non-geometric?
So I'm not really an expert there. I mean, there's, for instance, Chris Hull and collaborators have proposed this double torus formalism. So where you're sort of embedding it in a larger geometric space along mm-hmm. with some extra structure, mm-hmm. which tells you how to pull out the physical, you know, the physical torus to give a point to the base, for instance. But there hasn't been a lot of work. One connection that I'd really like to see explored a bit more systematically is a lot of these constructions have points, have orbifold points where you've got an asymmetric orbifold. Those are points where we, you know, can actually write down a CFT or something like this and do a very more systematic expansion. I'd like to understand how those sort of fit into the moduli space, if you like, of these more general constructions. I think I really have too much else to say.
Okay, so these are more or less the topics that I've listed here, and these are just topics that I kind of could come up with of people who are here. So in the future, there are kind of more people coming in, and there will be, yes?
Nobody said anything about inflation.
You're right. So who did I list? Fluxes and inflation. Was it
you?
It's probably you.
You never talked to me.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
go ahead.
In various, you know, flux compact condition contexts, so the work I've done is in 2A flux compact conditions. But anywhere where we've got sort of a map from a construction to an effective four-dimensional theory, immediately you want to start asking questions. Earlier we were talking about standard model gauge groups and things like this, but also even if you're not worried at all and you're more from the say, moduli stabilization side of this divide we talked about, you might want to ask if the effective theory you get admits things like metastable de Sitter vacua or regions which have slow roll inflation, you know, from some of the moduli inflation, for instance. And when people have tried to look for those in sort of decentralized setups, it's turned out to be a lot harder than you might have thought just from the way things appear. And it turns out in a lot of cases there are actually no go theorems. That the tree level potentials you get in four dimensions just do not admit slow roll inflation or metastable de Sitter. They're just always too steep in any regime where the potential is positive. And you know, there are exceptions, but basically it'd be nice to understand better why it's so hard, I think. And find examples where it does actually work. I don't know if anybody else has any inflation related.
Well, I mean, I think in inflation, I guess the basic idea, you could say, is that to go beyond just finding a vacuum and actually looking at the dynamical system, where you're doing flux complexification to a system where there's a time dependence in the arching movement. And that's a huge complication, which often is very, very neglected and very approximate. But still, and then you can, it's still good to do the approximations. And then the idea is to look at, and there's another thing, so it's nice to reproduce a standard model and to work on you know, what we've got and so forth, but often the inflationary observable, which we are detecting today, are much more sensitive to higher scale physics, and particularly sensitive to gravity instead of just gauge theories and so on. That's where string theory, of course, is. So like non-Gaussianity, tensor loads, or cosmic string results, interesting observables, which eventually all the flux classification data and the mechanism feeds into these things. So,
yeah. So can I just ask, what is the status quo in this
program? The status quo of which part of the program?
I mean, can you go get something with inflation?
This is the starting point of doing a legitimate flux complexification where you correctly introduce time dependence. And this is the starting point, I don't think it's very well understood, with moduli stabilization. But
it's very hard to lift 14 times by resolution to 10.
That's essentially what you're talking about. Yeah. You can find a vacua, but really, if you're doing a dynamical, then you should be away from the vacuum. And then, just that is already. But then getting inflation is possible, although hard, as you were saying.
I can say possible.
Well, let's just say hard. But you can. It's a fun. I think what a lot of the things that's been done is just to bypass a little bit of the difficulties and look for interesting signals. Just so that.
So what's the favorite scenario? Isn't the side of brain versus moduli? Is there?
Brain is.
I mean, there has been a lot of activity of these three brains rolling down together from Strassner.
Yeah, it's tractable.
Is that dead or
not? No, I think that's.
These are nice. These are nice.
They're just computable. You can know the metric.
Well, you were with David Koch last Tuesday, in which it seems like that field has, according to him at least, focused on these inflection point potentials, which I don't think were discussed when in the original KKLMMP version they were main focus. Yeah.
But then what's the progress beyond this? There, the higher dimensional brains.
Right. So you. And it is the sound speed model. So if you try to have higher derivative sound speed and multi-field models, so going beyond.
I mean, the nice thing about D3 was it was easy to make the potential flat because you only had to worry about a little part of the manifold, whereas with higher dimensional frames, they wrap. But maybe that's naive. I think
even D3 is not, the potential is not.
Yeah, I mean, even with D3.
It's not really.
Right.
I think the naive is not that the wrap has a non flat potential, and the D3 also has a very common once that reaction.
global models is going to be challenging there too. I mean, this is a kind of local effect in the manifold, but you've got fluxes that you've got to do something right. with someplace.
Right. Right.
And why that wouldn't cancel this effect, I don't understand.
Especially when you try to think of models like tensor modes, like Eva and her collaborators, I mean, her first models, the brain had to really sweep over the entire compact manifold.
Right.
Now it just sweeps many, many times around the little region. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if we see 10, well, yeah.
Okay, can I ask, I was going to ask for suggestions for logical strings. Logical strings. I missed logical strings, so.
Logical stabilization.
Yeah, I mean,
that is like.
That's why I didn't list them. It was okay.
But we did, when we planned this program, juxtapose these two subjects because we thought there were connections.
Okay. Wolfgang, are you telling us the connection?
No, just fluxes.
Andy?
Okay, I can mention one thing that came up recently that is connected to something over there, which was, this might be phenomenologically relevant. So we were studying with Greg Moore and David Goto. We were studying recently the metrics that you get on hypermultiple moduli spaces. Actually, what we were listening was the rigid version of that. So we took the Coulomb branch of a four-dimensional gauge theory and reduced it to three dimensions. And then you get a hyperkähler manifold. And the question is, how can you describe the corrections to that hyperkähler manifold that come from instanton, the BPSKs in four dimensions going around the circle? And one of the funny things that showed up in that calculation was it turns out that there are instanton corrections of the most naive sort that you would imagine. You have the BPS particle that goes around the circle. But there are also other corrections that you might not have expected, which are really multi-instanton contributions. And when I say multi-instanton, I mean, it comes from a multi-particle state in four dimensions, not from a bound state. Two particles that are not even mutually BPS, yet contribute simultaneously to the metric in three dimensions. So presumably things like that will also show up in the hypermultiple moduli space in four dimensions. Now, I don't know. I think that not much is known about that question. And when I had a conversation with Timo, and we even concluded that this kind of multi-instanton was not the same kind of multi-instanton that you studied before.
So in the animal life context, it's always the multi-instantons are always mutually BPS objects. So what's really disturbing me is this mutual non-BPS property.
Okay. So I also find it puzzling. So that might be something that will be. Of some phenomenological interest.
How concrete can you actually make this approach? If you, for example, want to compute, let's say, the quantum corrected version of the universal hypermultiple, can you do that?
No, I can't do anything in gravity today.
Ah.
That's certainly
so
longer jump.
Purely
absolutely, today I can only do. We can only do.
Any way of generalizing this?
There's a naive way of doing it,
yeah.
Which is probably right for the instantons that we talked about so far, but the thing is, in gravity, there's one new instanton you have to deal with, which is, if you go from four to three dimensions on the circle, you have to deal with the possibility that the whole four-dimensional space becomes Taub-Nut space instead of R3 times S1. So that's a really new instanton that you didn't have in gauge theory. It's in some sense the most interesting one, but we don't know today how to deal with its contribution. So.
Capture, by the way, I think the universal hypermultiple only decouples semi-classically. So once you start to do quantum corrections, unless you're working with a model that has no other hypermultiple.
Yeah, for example, type 2 in a rigid space.
Right.
So
yeah.
Then it would be one-dimensional.
But even that is probably not universal, right? I mean, even
that's true.
Right.
Let's call it one-dimensional hypermultiple.
Okay.
So type 2 in a rigid space.
Yeah, fine.
Is that being triggered by this discussion about this wall crossing formula?
Yeah. So it was in this exactly the same context.
I mean, it was not triggered by the instanton development, but it's more like triggered by the black hole.
Yeah, it came from the other direction. We were trying to understand the BPS particles, which would be black holes in gravity, but just say BPS particles. But it turned out the best way of understanding them was to think of them as instantons in this lower dimensional theory. But it turned out the a good way of understanding them was.
Do you want to add something to that, Wolfgang?
Me?
I won't let you escape.
Well, I say topological strings and fluxes that are based on topological strings, deep brain measurement.
Yeah, that's what I think I was thinking. If you want to understand deep brains, B-brains, at least, sort of small radius and non-geometric models, I don't know how to do it. That's a topological string can sort of at least get a handle on that.
How about the special geometry approach you had for flux compartifications?
The flux was a trivial part. Again.
But I thought you had kind of one common language for both, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's a common language which may be called N equal 1 special geometry, if you want to give it a name. In a sense, it mimics, to some respect, what is known to N equal 2.
You mean mixed up stuff?
Yeah. But the flux part is the easy part, because fluxes are essentially related to the bulk geometry, so all what depends on fluxes depends on the bulk model. But the new ingredient is the deep brains, and they may have extra moduli. They really bring a new structure. So in other words, but let's put it this way: if you consider a superpotential, the functional complexity you get for this just from the fluxes is much less than what you would get if you have extra deep brains, because the deep brains supply new kinds of periods, semi-periods, and more complicated functions. So the flux subsector is, in a way, always a trivial sector. And just in general, just to advertise this, topological strings and deep brains is a subject which is by far not exploited. So it's really only the tip of an iceberg. Especially in compact matter. Well, let's add more. As an advertisement, I think these things are important whenever you really want to do some computations. I mean, right. When I read phenomenological papers, I often see statements like, oh, we compute the superpotential, yes, and this is this. Like a correlation function with three fields inserted, yeah? Or some kind of intersection, or some bleaching of some forms, and that's it. Yeah? But for us, I mean, this would be the starting point, not the end point. So I'm saying that in most of these papers, nothing is really computed. Yeah? All the companies, the moduli. No, it's true. People talk about instanton correlations, we have computed instanton. They usually write down expressions which are non-vanishing. Yeah? And then we have computed, we thought that it is non-vanishing because of zero modes or whatever. But all these things depend on moduli, open and closed to your moduli. And there's almost no one really has been doing this computation.
Other than
Toroid models, which are, of course, a cheat. This is all before.
You're
going
to learn about this too then. Okay, so that's what I could come up with. So let me know if I'm still missing something. And apologies to everybody I pulled up with short notice or with no notice, so that's all I wanted to say.